Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well. Another gorgeous day. And I haven't noticed as much pollen, so, I mean, it's makes it even better. But, yeah, hope everybody is doing well. And welcome in to the Wednesday Drive. Bill, Dan, Jason Caldwell with us here in hour number one. Dan back at the controls. JC, how you doing?
Good. You're right. I haven't noticed as much pollen either. Being outside all weekend and then last night again and the wind blowing.
Man, the wind has really been blowing.
Has bothered me some today, even though I don't feel the pollen. I can feel it respiratory-wise because it's been a buildup of, 4 or 5 days outside. And like I said, the wind has been really the thing. So thankfully, getting some of this pollen out of here, hopefully we can get past that and start to get to the enjoyable part of spring now.
Well, but the weather has, I mean, the temperatures have gorgeous. Been just beautiful.
I mean, they have a great, great weather week for the Masters in terms of no rain, but it's going to make it really difficult.
The wind?
Because it's breezy and it's going to be firm because they haven't had any rain. We haven't had much rain, period. It's going to be firm and fast. I heard Roy McIlroy say today that if anybody gets to double digits, he thinks it would be a great score to get there for the week.
Of course, and that gets started tomorrow. So, we can take folks' thoughts on that. We can with Jason in here. Definitely going to look back. I was not at baseball last night because younger son and his bride had the Hall of Fame ticket. So
you did not miss much.
So I missed quite a show for Jack State.
First. Give credit to that team. They came in playing like a team that felt like this is a game we have a chance to go out and show the world how good we are.
They came with a little bit of a chip on their shoulder.
They're good. Yeah. They are good. But I think, look, it's a combination of things now for me. I think it's a combination of, look, they're just not swinging the bat very well. That's one part of this.
No.
And the other part of it, too, is you feel like as a team, you put so much focus on the weekends, and now you've moved Andreas Alvarez to the weekend, and you feel like, oh, well, these games don't matter as much. And they don't.
No, they don't.
But you still want to win them.
But and you surely don't want to get run ruled. First time Auburn's been run ruled in a couple of years.
Yeah, yeah.
That's just something you really don't want that to happen at home.
No, in a midweek game. You want to build some momentum at some point. That's something this team has not done to this point. They haven't built momentum. They haven't done. You had the games in Arlington. That's probably the best they played this year.
Oh, yeah.
Those three games. And then you've had a couple of games against Nebraska. And then last weekend they swung the bat pretty well except for the middle game against two really good pitchers. But you still didn't score a ton of runs. I went back and looked. You know the last time Auburn hit a home run with somebody on base?
Golly.
2020.
No.
Two.
No, it'd be back. Maybe second series.
It was the Georgia Tech midweek game. After Missouri.
Wow. Have they done it in conference?
Yeah, Bubs.
It was Missouri.
Home run.
Yeah, Missouri. Okay,
that's it. You play 12 games, you've hit one home run with somebody on base.
Auburn hasn't hit with the power that I thought they would.
No.
Period.
And then they've been solos. And you're like you need to run into a 3-run home run. Those are the swings you have where you go difference making swings. And they haven't had enough of those.
Open.
I mean, you go last night, you get four straight hits. And they did score four runs. But you get four straight hits, but you never got the big blow it open hit to get back in the game, and then you give them right back. So it was a forgettable game.
Oh, it was one. It was one. It wasn't just the bats. I mean, I mean that's something that is a continual problem. But I mean, Auburn making mistakes.
Correct.
It felt
like a game where guys went, oh well, look with this. I'm not saying it felt like you went into it going, we're not trying to win this game because you are. But I think it after for players, you're like, look, we're probably. And I got to think about it last night. Obviously, you know, Ryan Hetzler pitched last night, and it wasn't a close situation. And you don't normally see guys pitch very well in those opportunities anyway. But they had to give him some innings. But you start thinking about it because you take Drew Whalen out because he's hurt, and you go Jake Marciano. That's two. You go Jackson Sanders is three. Petra at four. Griffin Graves came back and threw, but that's five. Obviously, Andres Alvarez is six. You go your top six, what I would consider starting type pitchers, all off the table. You don't normally do that, but that's what this team has done now. They have said, listen, we're putting those guys, all our bullets now on the weekend, and I don't blame them.
Well, I mean, the thing is, in Chatterton, you've got the guy that was had the most returning starts innings and best ERA. I mean, he was an SEC starter last year.
As good as the other guys have been, Christian just hasn't found his rhythm right now, and he's not been able to throw the changeup for strikes, and so. But it was everything, and listen, it was very different, because when the game was over with, Butch Thompson left everybody in the dugout. Except for the players.
Yeah, I'm listening as Andy is trying to fill time and wait.
I've had situations like that before where it's like, you know what, that game didn't go as planned, and now post game is not going according to schedule.
Well, coach has got more pressing business.
Correct.
He's got to do the verb in his name, right? Like, he's got to go coach.
Then we got a chance to talk to him afterwards, and he said, listen, I did not want that to sit for 48 hours. And I don't blame him. And he said, look, there were some difficult questions. And we said, would you get the answers you wanted? He said, I got honesty. He said, but some of the answers weren't what I wanted to hear. What those are, we don't know, because he said it's none of your business.
Right.
Now, he did go back after that and say, hey, listen, here's what I'm looking for. But he said two things. He's like, no identity on offense, and they're too busy right now being the hunted instead of the hunter. I think those are two things that we'll see if it's a wake-up call for this team.
Well, they keep playing like this, and they won't be the hunted for too much longer. I mean, sure, in midweek games, you're always going to be.
But you're always the hunted. It don't matter if you're – like, because if somebody wants it more than you do
– Well, that's true.
They're the hunter, and you're the hunted. And I think that was that's really the first time we've seen that and heard that from Butch, and I thought it was on point because I felt it. I mean, I think everybody did. Now, look. The good thing about baseball is it's still just one baseball game.
That's right. It's not the last one. You've got plenty more to go. There's another one in 2 days.
You have 18 more SEC games to go, which are the most important games on this schedule from now on. But you got to play much better than you played if you want to go and have a chance to do what this team thought it had a chance to do this season. And when that happens, your best players have to play well. And, Chris Rembert has not played very well, had not a good game last night. Chase Frelick has played okay. But, look, those guys have to elevate it. You have to have guys carry teams in those roles right now. And so far we haven't seen anybody on this team do that.
Yeah, I mean, well, the guys that you expected from last year haven't been able to get back to last year's
much less take that step
that you usually expect in your sophomore year. So that, and then the freshmen, I mean, they've sort of hit the wall a little bit.
Yeah, been solid, but I mean, Ethan Bingham had a couple more hits last night. And so look, those guys are playing okay, but you can't count on them to lead the way.
Right.
And so, and part of this, we've been saying it since the beginning of the year, that the older guys that they were counting on to be those guys to kind of carry it, Lucas Steele and Kay Ballou. And Eric Guevara's played pretty solid. Bristol Carter is absolutely an emotional leader kind of guy. But you think about those other guys. We haven't seen Eddie Madrigal, much less. Logan Gregorio got a couple of hits last night. I think you'll see them continue to throw those guys in there and see if they can produce.
You know, one of the things that has just been, I know it's so frustrating for Butch, is – Auburn, it's not like they're going three up, three down and not getting any runners on base either. They just have had a problem. It has been a big problem of leaving runners on and leaving runners on in scoring position. Was it the third inning last night?
Yeah,
Got to catch bits and pieces as I was chasing the four-year-old
around. You got second, third, one out, your three and four hitters up, and it's six pitches.
Yeah.
Not only do you not score.
Yeah, you're right. But
six pitches.
Strikeouts.
Yes. obviously, you know, big opportunity here this weekend. You're going to face a team that almost plays exactly like Jacksonville State last night in Kentucky. They get hit by a bunch of pitches. They like to bunt. They like to run. They are the king of small ball in this league, and so you're going to have to be prepared for that heading this weekend.
All right, Jason with us here in hour number one. You can join us 334-321-1390 on the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar.
It just seemed like maybe they'd made, and I know that that's the nature of baseball, that you know progress isn't linear always, but it's like seemed like maybe they'd made some strides in the right direction as an offense against Arkansas.
Yeah, because you scored 10 in one game and 8 in another.
And then it's hard to feel like you're carrying any of that momentum into
that's been the problem. It's been consistent.
Into Kentucky. Yeah.
It's not like, you know, they scored 20 runs in three games. If it had been 6-7-6,
But the thing is like most everybody is dealing with the same things. We're focused on Auburn because we cover Auburn. Mm-hmm. Most everybody in Alabama's playing they're feel like Auburn did at the end of the year last year, where they're playing great baseball. They got it rolling, they're doing that. Texas lost to South Carolina last week. LSU could not have been any hotter going in after scoring 10 runs in the 12th inning in Knoxville that day and winning 16-6. They lose at home last night at Bethune-Cookman. Texas A&M, great weekend. Blast Vandy, lose at home last night to Texas State. Like I said, and I hate to use the word, it's just baseball, because like you shouldn't do what Auburn did last night, but you also played a better team, in my opinion, than most people play on a midweek, because that probably factored in as well.
It's enough to make you wonder, and I know like it's not a big enough sample size to draw these kind of conclusions, but if you're an SEC team in the thick of conference play, having to suddenly readjust to a Tuesday night game against a mid-major, I mean, you just read off a list of results where the quote-unquote more talented team from the SEC didn't win.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, you're generally saving your pitching. Mm-hmm. You're saving your pitchers, your SEC pitchers for the weekend.
Yeah, and look, like I said, to their credit, Jacksonville State, last night they throw a guy who had not started a game, but he'd been pretty good in 10 appearances and was pretty good only a couple of innings. But, look, they went to a guy that had a 0 ERA, a lefty, and he threw the last three innings of that game. They're like, okay, look, we're gunning for this one.
Mm-hmm.
Auburn brought L.J. Cormier in to pitch a couple outs there in an inning just to try to keep it close.
Yep.
They weren't going to burn anybody last night. I don't know that Jacksonville State burned anybody either, but you saw a definite difference in how the thing was pitched. But like as Butch said last night, you didn't see anybody last night that's better than you see on an SEC weekend. So there's no excuse for not being able to do what you've done against SEC pitching.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what it sounded like. Again, I didn't get a chance to see it, but just sounded like the concern about the effort, I think, was and just the mindset.
Yeah, mindset was probably it last night, and he doesn't normally say that, but last night it felt like more of that coming from them after that game.
All right, we're just underway, a quarter of the way through.
You haven't really seen a team jump on Auburn in the midweek either, right? Because Alvarez had pitched really well in a couple of midweek games. Like, you hadn't seen
it's now two in a row.
Yeah.
Before Georgia Tech did it last week.
Yep.
You had not really seen a team.
No.
The only one that was a midweek similar to that was early in the season.
Oh, yeah. Who was that?
They lost 8-1, whatever it was, but it was because they said, look, so we're not throwing anybody else in this game. They scored some runs.
And we thought
it was close for half the game.
And we thought maybe when Alvarez got moved to the weekend and Chatterton was going to get the weekend, you know, the midweek start last week against Georgia Tech and last night, there's the thinking like, well, maybe he can springboard.
Well, that's the hope.
From that into a weekend role, and it feels like it's kind of back to the drawing board right now after these last 2 weeks.
It was Cincinnati.
Yeah,
same
thing.
Right. Where it was, you know, Alvarez pitched okay early on.
Yeah, it was like 2-3-1 going to the sixth.
It was an 8-0 game, but
it was 2-3. Auburn was only down 2-3.
Correct.
Going to the late innings.
Yep, it was. They scored 2 in the eighth and 4 in the ninth. So it was a 2-0 game.
Right.
And so you had it just again. It was the same.
It was the bats.
It's a very similar thing. Had
bats.
5 hits, and then when you got to the back end, the team was able to extend a lead, and that's the same thing that happened last night.
All right, we'll get to our first break here of the afternoon. Again, love for you to join in. Anything on your mind, we'll definitely talk more transfer portal. We'll get some thoughts on spring football and much more as we're just underway here on the Wednesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive. Bill, Dan, Jason Caldwell here with us in hour number one. And we were just talking about, I'm sure a lot of folks have seen now that Auburn has tweeted out, Auburn Athletics has tweeted out, and we'd gotten an email a little while ago about an announcement of a major event coming up tomorrow, which is going to be held at Jordan-Hare Stadium in June. So
yes,
we'll find out in the morning exactly what that is. But it is interesting that the tweet says, see what the world is talking about. It's going to be a world event. So it doesn't just sound like another show.
You could speculate too. I mean, there's various global events happening in the United States.
There's some that I hope aren't going to be happening at Jordan-Hare Stadium. Global events happening at Jordan-Hare Stadium.
Sure,
but yeah, I hope it's an entertainment. I'm sure it is. But
the interesting thing would be, like, we know what's happening next summer,
right?
Fairly close to here, and it's the World Cup,
And we don't know anything, by the way. Just reading the tea leaves.
We were looking up concert venues earlier.
Then they tweet out world stage,
and you go okay, whatever. My thought is,
yeah, I don't think it's U2, right?
It'd be close.
Like Pearl Jam,
if it is some sort of soccer
Dave Matthews
event,
yeah.
Then you have to change how Jordan-Hare Stadium looks,
in my
opinion.
Yeah. That's
because I went and looked, and a soccer field is 115 by 74 yards. A football field is 53 yards wide.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about 10 yards on each side of the field, and then having room on the outside.
Yeah,
of the
so
field.
There's room in the bowl for that,
but not with
edges. That's right.
Well,
not
the other
where the vegetation
that,
is
well,
growing.
The other part of that too is you have that blue surface down in the end zone. You're talking about if you're 115 yards wide, the north end zone probably only has 4-5 yards. Outside the 120.
Right, before you hit the brick wall.
Yeah, and so, interesting. We'll see. We'll find out in the morning. But another opportunity to showcase Auburn and Jordan-Hare Stadium for sure. Whatever it is, it's going to be something big, and they've done that. And it's part of a big stadium news day.
Yeah. Yeah, no question about that. Some of the renderings there for the north end zone expansion and work are really impressive, interesting, and I've seen a lot of folks responding or posting about this. They're all from the outside, but as somebody said, more people are going to see it from the outside. But I mean, it is very impressive, and quite a few changes you can see there with the plaza or whatever is all going on up there on that northeast.
Yeah. I think
corner.
It's safe to assume that there will be changes on the inside.
Oh, there's no question
about
that.
It's safe to assume. How many people get moved? I don't know. We'll see. There's going to be some. It's just part of it. And I got to think about it today going, listen, we've been part of that too.
Oh, yeah.
The media's been moved. Andy's been moved. Radio's been moved. It is part of the world we live in right now. And so I think you start looking at it going, the one thing we've already written and talked about is, like, this is going to be – and they kind of alluded to it, Nathan wrote about it, is this is part of a greater project where you're going to have some connections to the outside with a plaza, more than just football stadium.
Oh no, it's much more, and that's how this is being done. And that's one of the things that when John Cohen was first talking about this, it's something a multi-purpose with spaces that can be used by the university, by the city.
It's going to be there's going to be a lot of different ways to use this, and for this to be a massive money maker too, I would imagine.
Yeah, the Jordan-Hare Stadium North End Zone Multipurpose Event Center Edition, that's going to be voted on by the trustees next Friday. $323 million worth of upgrades on the north side of Jordan-Hare Stadium, including a, quote, seven-story, approximately 300,000-square-foot building addition to the stadium with new campus and game day kitchens, flexible dining and concession venues, a multi-purpose hall and ballroom, intentionally flexible spaces for campus and game day usage, and new club and premium suites, unquote. Now
that's, I think, $305 million of it is that, and then $18 million is that redoing the area and that is outside
at the
multi-purpose.
The re-envisioning of the North Plaza is the $18 million re-envisioning campus between Jordan-Hare and Haley. That's the elevated connection to the new multi-purpose center from Petrie, and it would be extensive. I don't know from those descriptions exactly how many, like, if you sit in the stadium and you have a seat you like, I wonder how much would, like, these renovations would jeopardize anyone's current seats.
Here's the thing. You're not going to put everything above that scoreboard.
Right. Yeah. I mean, like, do you see the
if
you see the pictures,
the scoreboard's on top of that.
The scoreboard is still above there, so it's going
to be all below
right.
that. Okay. Affecting and it's not going to be all that. On the back side of the stadium.
Right.
So it has to. It's going to have
so
to.
So these are seats like over by us. Right? Are these
No, these are on the opposite end.
These are on the other side. Okay.
Yeah, so it's going to impact North City.
Yeah, I mean when I look at the rendering there, I mean you can see a flat roof on the other end just below the scoreboard, and that's obviously where the club seating I would think is going to be.
But you got to be able to see the field.
Yes. So that's going to affect people that have been sitting.
Some of that,
in some,
of,
those
some
seats.
Of it is. Some of it's a, you know, the state, the scoreboard. Some is, of it is, of, is, is above, raised above that
above
right now.
Where the current
you'll have some
is.
Of that, but I don't think it's going to be all of it. I think there's going to be some seats.
They're going to want put. They're going to want put some. They're going to want to put some of that below.
Yes, I think it's going to.
And where current seating is, I'm sure that's the case.
Yeah, but, the other, you know, there's lots of moving parts to doing this, and you know, people are like, why isn't it done already? Why isn't it done? You got to think about. Listen, that's where. The visiting team locker room is.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the visiting team enters. That's where all the TV trucks come in to do games.
That's
all,
where they have been. All, yeah. It sure doesn't look like that's going to be possible.
I don't know where those things are going to happen now, but I think it's you start talking about where all that happens, and do you find a way to create a because if for me obviously we get to do it. But going to road games at like Texas A&M, for example, is one. Arkansas is another. They have an underground staging area, basically like a loading dock for a warehouse. They have loading docks for their stadium,
right?
Where these trucks and buses can pull in,
where teams and
can
things
back
like.
Up. You can get all your equipment in, all those things. You can do all of that without having to park on the side of the street. I wonder if that's something they're going to have to approach, and is that part of this to figure out how you're getting the opposing team in, how you're getting TV trucks in? Because if you close off the north end zone, then there's only one end, and it's the end zone where Auburn is. You got Tiger Walk.
Tiger, that's right.
You're not getting 18 wheelers in that entrance where that is. So you're gonna have that's gonna have to be part of this. Is I would believe some kind of loading dock area.
Yeah, part of that $305 million's got to accommodate that, I'm sure.
Yes.
And then the scoreboard was another 26, so it's going to end up being around $350 million total for the north end zone. So that's very impressive. But, yeah, you can see some of the renderings, and they really look neat. I mean, man, that doesn't look anything like the north end of the stadium.
No, it's going to be fantastic because you're going to fill in that area and create a whole plaza in the north end zone where that hole is now.
Well, it's not. It would seem to be sort of reminiscent of how, you know, where the student center for Neville, right? Like you've got some you've got sort of a green space, you've got some restaurants over there, you've got buildings that are used for campus purposes. Like I could see sort of a larger scale version of that as one of the entrance points at Jordan-Hare.
This obviously like this will be where you'll have pregame, postgame football radio. You'll have areas set up for those kind of things. That's where you would do something like that now.
Yeah.
And in that kind of area, in my opinion, you'd have, stages set up. Arkansas does it on a road, but they have food trucks. They have TVs set up. We just saw it for baseball. that would give you the opportunity as an athletic department to create a game day atmosphere that would be mm-hmm. incredible for folks who don't tailgate as much mm-hmm. anymore. And you go, hey, I want to go hang out at the stadium. Well, they give you the opportunity to do that.
Yeah, so that will be voted on, and I'm sure. I mean, I haven't heard of any reason why it won't be approved because of the fact that it is a multi-purpose expansion.
Jason, what do you hear from fans as far as like the most critical things Jordan-Hare Stadium needs to address? Because I know that's like a thing. I mean, we get sort of a different perspective from where
depends on who you talk to.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, depends on where they sit.
From where we sit, we get a different.
Can they park?
We get a different experience than some other folks. But like, yeah, I can get a.
Yeah, I mean, I think they've tried to improve, the concessions, widening out some of the things, adding those in the north end zone. They tried to improve some of those things.
Yeah, I mean,
last
some of the
year.
Things you can't.
There's
really
only
do.
So much yes. you can do because, yeah. like, it's an older, established stadium. So you can try to keep upgrading, doing some of those things. Down the road, would I be shocked to see maybe some stadium seating in some of those premium areas in the middle of the field? I wouldn't be shocked to see that down the road. I don't think that's something right now, but I bet you there'll be stadium seating for a lot of these areas going in now.
Courtside?
Yeah.
Courtside seats maybe coming in?
No, they already have that. I mean, the visiting bench has people standing up on a rail right behind it, the whole 100 yards. I mean, there's field side seats already. Mm-hmm. They're standing up. But I think for most folks, listen, you're people that are going to get moved are going to be upset. That's just going to be part of it. And it's unfortunate, but it is part of, okay, well, hey, we need to do something to keep up with folks and to create revenue and to do those things. And
premium seating is no question.
You can add all the seats you want to. You can go to 120,000 seats if you want to. It's not going to make as much money as this will. Hmm. It just wouldn't do it.
All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. When we come back, we'll talk about today's news in the basketball transfer portal. I'd love for you to join in. Got any questions, thoughts, comments? 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar.
At Opelika Power Service.
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive. Bill, Dan, and Jason Caldwell here in the studio. And it's day two, Jason, of the transfer portal officially being open. And Auburn is up to two players that are now in the portal, right?
Yeah, you're right. Obviously, Filip Jovic was the first one. Maybe a little bit of surprise, but then you look at
much more of a surprise than the word today.
Yeah, Cade Magwood today, not a surprise there. But yeah, Filip Jovic was the first one, and look, his agent he's got a bunch of guys that are really good in professional basketball, but he's also got about eight or nine guys that are in the portal now, all mm-hmm. of them, and they're all big men from that part of the world, and so look, it's just part of it. You hope you can hold on to guys. And but if you start getting a crazy number, and you go, look, sooner or later, you have to pay a budget of some type.
I mean, correct.
It is not unlimited. And listen, Auburn's got money, and they're going to spend money, but it's not $50 million. And I mean, somebody may have that this year. I don't think they're going to have it in basketball. We see it in football, but. You still have to figure out how much you think a guy's worth.
It reminds me a little bit of, again, without knowing any of the numbers and without knowing any of like the real details here, it reminds me a little bit of like what we were thinking was going on with Malcolm or like Perry Thompson, where it's like if the program's going to give you what you want, you have to be a legitimate number one.
Correct.
Like you have to be for Auburn to give Filip Jovic the rumored amount.
Yeah. Oh, you need to know he's a starter.
He needs to play 35 minutes a game. And if he finds a school willing to pay him that, they probably will pay him 30. They will play him 35 minutes a game.
Correct. Because yes, you're right. We talked about it in football. Look, he may not be your number one, but he may be somebody else's number one.
Right.
And everybody has some money now. You may not have $12 million, but listen, you're going to have a budget now because of this, quote unquote, I guess, the budget that everybody has, this money that you have to spend, $20.5 million, whatever it is. Listen, we saw it in Minnesota is where Perry Thompson wound up for football. Perry Thompson is going to be the best receiver that probably Minnesota's got. They would pay him number one money. Same thing for Jovich. Like, he's not going to be your number one, but who knows? NC State, somebody like that may go, dude, that guy's going to be the best player we got. We just, Will Wade's gone. We got some money to spend. Let's go get this guy and see what happens in year two.
Yeah, how many major conference programs are starting over? Right, that's before you even get into the idea that he can make
it. I'm just losing. I mean, heck, I mean, this thing like Tennessee's got five, six, seven guys in.
Seven guys and have gone in.
And you're probably going to lose.
And no women's players.
No, and none. Zero.
women's players
but,
on the roster.
But, you know, you may lose your best freshman. He's probably going to be a draft pick, maybe a lottery pick. Amen. I mean, like, you start going, some of those teams might go, listen, we got to have that guy. Auburn's going to have guys too. But you're going, look, that guy, he averaged 6 points and three rebounds and, Can he be a four that plays 32 minutes a game? Maybe, but I don't. You can't
you
count
know
on
it.
That.
You better know it.
You cannot
you're
count
that
on
kind of
that.
Money.
And right now, it's just like.
And I feel like you do, without knowing any of the financial details of Kevin Overton, you do
you know
feel.
Oh, you know he can give you 30 plus minutes.
Here's the thing, and a guy like
high quality,
15 points
offense
a game,
and defense.
Who knows? It may be 20 points a game next year.
Yep.
I mean, like you saw. What he's capable of this year. And you know here, high character, quality guy.
Leader.
Play his tail off 100%. You know what that guy is. And now,
and
what
he's also 6'5".
Yeah, and he –
You know, I mean, that's people forget. They think, he's a little guard.
I was thinking about that because I heard somebody else talking about, well, he, you know, comparing him to the Georgia Tech transfer last year.
Miles Kelly. Yeah, I heard he didn't have the length.
Like he's 6'5". He's not short.
He's shorter.
And, you know, like, you know, Miles Kelly was – 6'3" and a half, 6'4". Now he had long arms, but like, listen, Kevin Overton's not small. Now, can you keep Sway? That's the first one,
yeah,
in my
no
opinion.
Kidding.
Elijah Freeman feels like he's staying. We'll see. But you have those three, and then listen, who knows what happens with Todd Pettiford? The one thing I don't think is I don't think you go, hey, well, whatever it takes to keep you, I don't think you can play that game.
No.
Well, whatever it takes to keep you, like I said earlier in the week, like whatever it takes to keep Tahad could imperil your ability to keep some of those other guys.
Or, well, get, or, like, get, you,
get
guys.
Other guys.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. If Tahad was what we just saw at Arkansas, then you do it. If you go, look, you want to stay around another year and you're averaging – you know, 25 a game and leading the league in assists and doing all, then you do it. And listen, I think Tahad has a ton of potential still, but it's still that word. It's still potential for him. Going, look, can you be that guy every day? Can you be that guy consistent? So you're like, okay, can you sink a bunch of money into that again? Or do you go, look, we got Kevin Overton. Let's go get big. Let's go get defensive and then go find a couple of shooters. I think you explore every option you have, and I would guess that's going to be the thing they'll do.
Yeah, it is going to be crazy. I think all over they're going to be so many teams that are turning their roster. I mean, maybe not as much as Auburn did last year, but I mean, massive turnover on so many rosters.
It seems like conversations we had during football season, where it's like you'd love to have this guy back. I mean, how about you said this about several guys that chose to leave the team this past offseason in football. You know, got you know, important players from the 25 season that are playing somewhere else in college football right now. It's like you'd love to keep them at what cost, right? Like at the point
that's
like,
it. You sooner or later you have to set what you think somebody's worth.
Have a value. It's
you have to. You know, and they say, look, well, somebody's value is what somebody's willing to pay them, but that's not what you have to pay them.
And
somebody else can, but you don't have to do that.
And you don't want to be in a situation where you can't make other moves that you feel like are necessary because you spent so much to keep one player in the fold.
No, you're gonna have to. You want to field a full team.
Yeah.
That can be quality at every position. I mean, you don't want to go out and have a great backcourt with no front line in basketball. You don't want to go out and have. It seemed like Auburn has done that. Go out and have great skill players and no offensive line. You know, I mean, that's the kind of thing that you have to do now because you are limited. There are limits you're going to reach the end of that budget at some point, and you need to try to fill your roster as best possible.
Since you said offensive line, you want to pivot real quick to some of Jason's guys from the spring. Anything that's caught your eye in spring football this the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, we'll start with offensive line because I think Ty Buster's a guy that has caught everybody's attention. I think the interesting thing right now is that you start looking at it and some of the moves. They're moving guys all over the place.
Man, he's a guy that I've seen with the ones at guard and at tackle.
Yeah, and I think he can play both. That's good. I think you start looking at it and going, the question now is what is Stanton Ramil?
Right.
What is he? Talked to some folks and said, look, the thing about him, he's really smart and he's versatile. He can play both sides easily. It feels like we're trending more to him being on the right side early on. And then, James Madison transfer potentially being your left tackle.
Big Joe
Simmons is a guy that, he's got a competitive streak in him. He's a pretty athletic guy. But then you start looking at, I'm telling you, there's a lot of really interesting players up front.
Cole Best is your center.
Yes,
that is your lock.
Well, it seems like you've got upperclassmen options to where you could go. You could go old with this offensive line,
yeah.
And it'd be fine.
Yep.
And you could very well have players like Ellis and Buster and Zierer waiting in the wings.
Jacoby Ward's a guy they
Jacoby
like
Ward, to, I mean, and, the, and these are guys where it's like, it'd be great if any of those guys are actually in the starting five.
Yeah.
But even if they're not, like the thought that they could
just think like Derek Platt's just a sophomore.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a guy that's in the mix there.
He appears to be right there.
Kenneth McManus, sophomore. Mm-hmm. So you brought in some old guys. TJ Hedrick's a redshirt freshman. Like you got young high school guys, you got guys in the middle, and you got old guys. I think they did a great job of building this offensive line room because it's not just all
– not a bunch of seniors.
You don't have to go, we're going to have to go sign 7 transfers again next year. That's a good part of this. But I think, Jacob Strand, we hadn't seen much, but he's a guy that can play both tackle spots, can play guard. You mentioned –
Jack Lehrer is another older guy.
But Wilson Zierer is a guy that is a really interesting guy.
He's
athletic.
Yeah.
Having the older brother that played in the NFL and knows it, he doesn't feel like he's overwhelmed right now. But I think he's somebody to keep an eye on. I wouldn't be surprised to see him at least be in the mix.
Yeah, I think he'll play. Yeah. I mean, I was thinking he was probably a redshirt before we started watching spring, but not after I've seen him out there working a lot with the ones. All right, so we'll talk a little more about that. Let's get to the phone. So,
hey Brett,
hey guys, Jason on Kale Ellis. Do you think they're gonna play him at guard? Does he have a good chance at starting at offensive guard?
I think he'll have a chance. There's that. It's really interesting because I just wrote a story on him today, and I messaged him because I said, I wanted to, obviously he's a guy that graduated high school early. I said, look, I need, and so I started talking about, look, he got a year of experience and he should have still been in high school. And his birthday is the end of this month. And I said, hey, how old are you? Is it 19? He goes, no, 18. He's still just going to be 18 years old in like 3 weeks.
Played the entire season as a 17-year-old.
And so you start thinking about that going, look, I think he's a guy that could absolutely play guard for this team. I wonder if you're them, if you go, all right, hey, if we need you at center, then we're going to play at center. But we would like to be able to redshirt you behind Cole Best for a year. And then, but here, if he's one of your best options at guard, he'll play. I think that's the one thing we found out from these guys. Look, they're going to play the best guys. But I wonder,
we're here,
at center if you go, man, if you're not the guy.
Then if you're not going to start, then
let's see if we can preserve a year.
Feels like we're hearing about more. Feels like we're hearing more about other guys at guard than Kale through the last couple of weeks. Again, I think part of that's because he's a 17-year-old, and some of these other guys are.
Well, he's also your second best center, too,
and he's also your second. And he's also your second best center. But Brett, I think it seems like a really positive sign that they have, and maybe they're not going to be load bearing pieces on the offensive line this year. Seems like they have several young guys they really like as contenders right now who could be part of the future of this program. Jacoby Ward, Cale Ellis, and
you know, you bring in some true freshmen too. You signed a pretty big class of true freshmen that thankfully you don't have to go. Oh man, you might have to play this year.
What's Killian's brother's name?
Yeah, Wilson. Now, Wilson. Wilson's a guy that could be in there, but Bear McWhorter and Mason Mathis, a couple of big guys, Parker Pritchett. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got three or four other true freshmen that you can now go, hey, just take your time, get better, and watch these older guys play.
And Ty Buster might be leading the charge of those young guys.
I think he's a guy that absolutely every bit of an opportunity to play.
Yeah.
Hey, Jason, last question. How about Marchese? I'm sure he won't start, but do you think he'll get a chance to play?
Yeah, you're looking. To me, I think he's in the mix. It feels like Deshaun Spencer out of that freshman group is probably the guy that might have the chance to play earliest at wide receiver. Marchese's a guy that, because he's probably going to be more outside, there's probably more guys to have to climb over on the outside for him. But listen,
are we limiting this just to the true freshman?
Yeah, I think just a wide receiver.
Okay, because there's some young guys.
Well, I mean, you got Duke Smith out there that I think is going to jump in the mix. Obviously, all the guys you brought in as transfers. It's a deep group.
Is it Marchese?
Marchese.
Marchese. Yep. Marchese's quick.
Yeah. I think he'll have an opportunity. Cody likes him. He's been watching him for a long time.
How old is Williams Jr.?
Yeah, he's a true freshman.
And I've seen. I'll tell you what I've noticed about Williams Jr. is, and this is maybe a good sign and a bad sign, that a couple of times Alex Golish has really been paying attention to Williams Jr.'s play and has pulled him aside for some extra coaching.
I think he really likes those big guys, those tall targets there at receiver that can run, which they've got about three or four of them.
Yeah. All right, guys, y'all have a great evening.
All right, Brett, good hearing from you. Let's get to our final break of hour number one. One more segment with Jason as we continue here on the Wednesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron. 382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back in. Final segment here on this Wednesday edition of The Drive. Yeah, it is a busy time, Jason. We've talked about it. I mean, so many things going on. Basketball season is done, but we're far, far from being done with basketball news. There's no telling. I mean, just because I'm a little surprised that actually there hasn't been more news about the transfer portal from Auburn. I had a couple people went, well, this is great for Auburn. They're not in the portal. It's like, no. They've still got 13 more days.
It means you're negotiating.
What's going on.
Yeah, we'll see what happens, because here's the thing. Just because you're not in the portal doesn't mean that people aren't trying to negotiate with you already, because you know that's happening too. So a lot of times when you go in the portal, it's already done. Mm-hmm. So the work is happening right now, and you're trying to keep him from...
Yeah, Auburn's trying to keep players that they want to keep.
And schools are representatives of schools are contacting representatives of players to try to talk them into going in the portal.
Just because the light's on doesn't mean the player's waiting for you, right? A lot of offers.
As we saw last year, like even guys that are enrolled and already in class can go somewhere else.
Yeah, I mean, and Auburn a year ago thought they had Chad Baker-Mazzara in the fold,
that's right,
and locked
right
up, and then what, a week circumstance changes.
Listen, like Floyd Benunga is a guy that Auburn felt pretty good about, and he went back to Kansas instead of staying in the portal. And so, look, yeah, there's a whole lot of stuff that's going to happen before this thing's closed,
and then
that just starts it.
Oh yeah,
because in like basketball, it doesn't feel like football, where it feels like you got to get it done in 24 hours because you actually start classes in January. For this, is these guys won't be on campus till end of May, and so you got time.
Real quick, Jason, a Masters winner of the favorites, and maybe a long shot if you have one. I give you the odds right now.
Yeah,
if you want.
I'm good. I don't need any odds. I'm fine, because that'll just sway me.
All right,
from the top group of guys, what I would consider the top group of guys, I would go Matt Fitzpatrick. I think he's playing really well. He's won once. He's been close another time. I would say Matt Fitzpatrick And then
he's seventh on the board as far as
maybe another one of those guys would be Victor Hovland. That would be two guys that I like ball striking for them.
Okay.
And then from the down the line guys that probably don't have as much, Ben Griffin, I don't know where he is on that thing. Ben Griffin would be my outside
sort of a long shot.
He's probably in the 20s, maybe down to 20s, 30s in favorites, but that would be my down the line guy that I would go. I think that guy's got a chance to win.
Yeah, great seeing like VJ and Fred Couples and Mike Weir.
They'll be out there and knock it around. Fred Couples will probably make the cut at 66 years old because he'll do that again. But yeah, I would say that's a guy. And then a guy like Aldrich Botgier can bomb it and really hit it a long way. Guys like that can make a run here, and Chris Goddard would be another one.
I would say Rory potentially, and then I would throw. Morikawa has some good looking odds. I'd toss.
I don't trust him. It's been a while since he's really been that guy.
How about Brooks?
He normally plays well in USO. You know, we'll see what he does here. Everybody's talked about how well John Rahm's playing. He's always a threat there as well.
Jason, great stuff as always. As I was mentioning, though, I mean, there's so much going on in multiple sports, and you guys do a great job. Yep. Let everybody know how they can keep up with it all.
Yeah, it is. Busy time. Yeah, check us out, AuburnUndercover.com, part of the 24/7 network, all our social media platforms, and we'll have some practice access in the morning. Our announcement tomorrow, baseball press conference, football recruiting still going on, and then, basketball portal as well. So come check us out.
Thanks a lot, Jason. Jason Caldwell with us, and we appreciate that. We're out of time for hour number one. Right back with the second hour of the show.
When you need a ride, you
action. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to hour number two of the Wednesday Drive. A gorgeous Wednesday afternoon. I said yesterday, what a great day for baseball. It was. Well, maybe the day was great. The baseball absolutely wasn't for Auburn. We opened up hour number one. Jason Caldwell was with us.
Would have been great if Auburn played some.
Yeah, that's right. He Jason was there, as was our 5 o'clock guest / co-host, Adam Cole, suffered through that only 8 innings of it though, Adam, last night. My goodness, to get run ruled. I mean, look, Jack State is they are a good team, good team. But that's not the product that Auburn wants to be putting on the field.
Not in the slightest in every regard last night. I'm thinking now, I don't even know if it made it into the recap, but Auburn had four errors last night too. I mean,
four errors, 14 Ks. How many did they leave on base?
I think it was 11.
Yeah, they did.
You know,
yeah, those are some numbers that don't usually translate into a great performance.
Not in the slightest. It was, it just felt like nothing we had. It had been bad before.
It had.
But
yes.
I don't know that you've seen run ruled against, a mid-major squad, a good one at that, like levels of bad, yet. They hadn't been run ruled at home in 2 years.
Right.
Yeah. So.
Well, and you had pretty strong midweek performances too, up until.
Well, you'd had Andreas Alvarez
exactly.
starting, so that helped. But I mean, even like we were talking about it with Jason a little while ago, even in the Cincinnati loss, I mean, Dre pitched well, gave up a couple of runs, but Auburn couldn't score. I mean, there was more of that last night, but without the starting and then follow-up pitching.
Right, and that I think was the biggest thing, and it was, I think I was telling you guys before we, kind of went in here that, I think Butch Thompson summed up everything I'd kind of been thinking, wondering, seeing for the last, 4 weeks or so, and it was basically, not only has the offense not been consistent, but the lack of identity, and I think he basically said that if I asked anybody on our team right now, coaches or players, like what our identity is on offense, like I don't think any of them could tell me. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that's last night felt like a pretty fitting game for that, considering the way, you know, Jacksonville State got off and rolling with, I think it was three straight bunts. And, you know, they kept doing a little more of that. And Auburn's going to see a lot more of that this weekend against Kentucky. But, you know, that's not to say that Auburn needs to go small ball. I would say Auburn does not need to go small ball, but it has just felt like the approach, just the intent at the plate has just been, it's looked sporadic and it's looked kind of clueless at times. And I think you saw a lot of that last night, and it's just at best has been, you know, get going too little too late. And then you get results like that one last night.
Well, and the numbers in conference play are pretty stark, you know, even with Auburn having a 500 mm-hmm. win-loss record, like the offensive numbers would.
Oh, the offensive numbers, absolutely. Because mm-hmm. pitching, there's nothing wrong with the pitching numbers.
Yeah. I mean, and while that's, I mean, you do get the feeling that, like, when you're getting pitching like this, you can compete with just about anybody, but you're also subject to, if there's a day where your pitcher doesn't have it, you could find yourself. And you don't want to put the pressure on the pitching staff of, mm-hmm. yeah, well, you're going to lose any game.
Yeah,
where,
you need to pitch a shutout every
time
out.
If the other team gets to four, yeah. you know, you're not going to win. And that's something. And I guess what's really disappointing is the thought that you were hoping you could build on the Arkansas series, mm-hmm. and the fact that you were able to score some runs and get some, and a couple of guys showed signs of life, mm-hmm. and it's hard to believe that you're coming into Kentucky with any sort of momentum mm-hmm. when your midweek game goes as poorly as the one last night went.
Yeah, no, to go back to square like that, I certainly don't think you anticipated that, you know, happening. But at the end of the day, like, it's going to set up for, I think, such an interesting weekend, because what you're saying about the pitching, I mean, that was something Butch had said after a game earlier this year of, like, it feels like right now our pitching has to be perfect. And I don't care which side of the game that's on. Like, when you're leaning on one thing, having to be that precise, like, it's just so, it can be so quick to implode. And you just saw that in spades last night. And so I think really, like, at the plate, that's the thing too about the pitching and the success of it on the weekend, especially, is it's like, if you can do enough to just take it down to brass tacks, focus on getting to first, once you get runners on, moving them over in simplest terms and not, you know, I think there's so much power potential in this lineup.
I agree. But we just haven't seen it.
But at the end of the day, I think the way that you get to that is, you know, work deep in counts, you know, prioritize how you're hitting with two strikes. You know, I stop short of saying, like, hit for contact, but of that spirit, like, if you can find success with that, I think you're going to find the power too.
Yeah, it'll come. It absolutely will.
You've seen it in previous years mm-hmm. to the point that it feels like sometimes when Auburn gets to the postseason, it's slugging better than it has all year. And it's like, I think if you can go back to that and find success with it, with the way that your pitching has gone, like, you can get right back to where you need to be. But it's it was nice to hear last night of, like, yeah, like, this has looked like it has no identity. This has looked like it has no approach at times. And I'll be really, really curious to see what the response is.
Yeah, and what's crazy, Adam, is I mean, coming into the season, there really wasn't concern about the hitting. Mm-hmm. That was almost took that for granted. Mm-hmm. This team's going to hit. Are we going to get the pitching that we hope we can get? And the answer has been a resounding, oh yes. Mm-hmm. They've gotten every bit and more from the pitchers, starting pitchers especially, than you could have even dreamed for as we approach the midway point of conference play. And it's been the area you thought hitting would have to carry you for a little while, and it's been the other way, and you're waiting now to see if the hitting can come around.
Right. It's funny because it feels like we've been in this circumstance in years past watching Auburn of, like, the inverse, mm-hmm. you know, of it's like, will the pitching come around? Will they find enough that they can buckle down to do it? And, you know, to see it be where it is right now, like, it's somewhat shocking. I mean, more than shocking, that's probably an understatement. But just at the end of the day, like, you got to figure something out, I think, in the midweek, honestly, as well, as far as, like, with what you've had in terms mm-hmm. of pitching. Like, you know, Christian Chatterton, I don't know if you throw him out there for another midweek, but...
No, you maybe try Griffin.
I wonder about that, because that was something Butch talked about last night, too, of, like, it was we needed to get him in there for an inning, you know, and this was not the most optimal game to do that. But I wonder about Griffin Graves in the midweek, because with what you saw in the finale of the Arkansas series with Petrovic and Sanders, like,
no kidding,
you have those options are all still there and living up to their potential right now. And if you can figure out a way to make that as dominant as humanly possible, like, you know, not that you've already given your lineup so much breathing room by way of that, but if you can give it another inch, like, that's going to take you that much further.
What's your confidence level, like, I mean, between now and the end of the season, and you know you're going to face good teams in the postseason, assuming they get there, like, do you feel like a breakthrough or change is coming for this Auburn offense, or do you feel like this is something we could be talking, is there enough sample size now that the die is cast and we could be talking about this team sort of scuffling offensively the rest of the year? I'd like to know your thoughts too, Bill. Like you know, is this something that's like, do you see signs of a turnaround, or do you feel like this is something that
I don't know. I mean, I haven't really. I mean, you hope that you were, you know, a couple of times against Arkansas, but Arkansas's pitchers have struggled so much this year. I don't know.
Those are still some of their better starts.
As Adam said, I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, do we see anything different looking this weekend against Kentucky?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, boy, I mean, Chris Rembert has been the guy that's just, you know, you just keep waiting and thinking he's going to bust out. And he'll have a game or two, but then he'll have a couple of games where it looks like he's just so over-aggressive at times and just swinging at pitches that he didn't swing at last year.
Yeah, that's been the thing. It's been just, like, not only aggressive, but, like, really aggressive to a fault. And, you know, I think the reality is we're deep enough into SEC play that, like, I'm not going to be shocked if the scuffle continues to a point where this just continues to spiral down and down. But at the end of the day, like, you've also got – I think you've seen positive signs from a couple guys in the lineup, in particular Eric Guevara and Brandon McCrane. Like, they looked really steady over the weekend. They looked – I forget what their stat lines were last night, but I know at least, like – and this is a fraction of it, but Eric worked a walk. Yeah, he went 1-for-3 with a hit, and then – Brandon went 0-for-3 last night, but you know, if you can have a couple guys steady out, I think that's going to help you. And then really, you know, like Bill said, I think the biggest thing is going to be just seeing what it looks like this weekend against Kentucky. And I think from there, we're really going to know, but you're deep enough in this now where, you know, this could be something that just keeps scuffling.
334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. You can join us if you'd like to talk anything because there's so many different things going on. But, I mean, we just started with baseball because that's the sort of the freshest thing from last night.
And Adam does a great job covering
the
baseball team for the Advertiser, and he's had his finger on the pulse all season long. And it's, I mean, it feels like we're back to where we were a week ago where – I mean, this is a really important series against Kentucky.
It's at home against a team that you ought to be able to beat at home.
And you're you know, you'd love to find some answers, and you really hope that you're not coming out of the series searching for answers, because you know you're gonna be 15 games into a 30 game SEC slate when this this weekend's over.
Yeah, you're gonna have you will have had three of your five. You're gonna have three of your final five series going to be on the road, and in this league, that's going to be very, very tough. So you can't afford to lose another series at home. And you know, Auburn did what they had to do this past weekend, beating Arkansas. If not for one pitch, they could have swept that series. But they've got to take care of business, and we'll see. I mean, how that post game meeting and then how practice goes tomorrow when they get out there on the field Friday against Kentucky.
Yeah, that was the other thing about last night was that thing went final, and it was you look up and blink, and it's like, okay, the whole team's out there, and Jason pointed it out to me, but he's like, there's no other coaches, it's just Butch. And that's, you know, I mean, for people who've been around
that's
that program,
unusual.
You know, that is rare. And I filed my instant, I got caught up in conversation, came down expecting to see Butch doing post game, and Jason was standing there in the concourse watching because he was still talking to him. I think he went 15 minutes. You know.
Well, I was listening, and we were babysitting last night. I was trying to listen, and yeah, Andy's filling for 15 minutes because Brad's down there waiting for Butch. So yeah, it was unusual, but I got to hear some of Butch on the post game, but yeah, he obviously wasn't happy, and I mean, the way he responded to a couple of things, not normal Butch, but that was not normal Auburn baseball last night.
Yeah, no, I mean that is a by all means a wake up call sort of contest and performance of like you got to have that sit down and you got to hash that out. And I mean he said that last night too when he talked to us. He was like, I didn't want this to sit for 48 hours. He's right. like we needed to talk about it right now.
All right, we're just underway here in hour number two. Got a lot we can get to. Again, you're welcome to join us as well as we continue here with the Wednesday Drive.
War Eagle, this is Coach Larry Vickers, and you're listening to ESPN 106.7. Auburn Oval.
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive. Bill, Dan, and Adam Cole from the Montgomery Advertiser here in the studio. And we were just talking about a story. I guess Ross Dellinger of Yahoo wrote a story that the NCAA is proposing. One of the things we've talked about for a long time, Dan. I've always wondered why the NCAA didn't do something like this years ago, and that is 5 years to play five. No concerns about red shirts. You don't have to worry about how many games you've played.
You didn't have players trying to extend their careers in the same way that you do now.
Oh, no, not even close. Like, no, you didn't.
I mean, the thought of like, I mean, not now because of the obvious financial incentives. Like now it makes sense for a quarterback to play a seventh year of college football or an eighth year of college football if they can find a way to do it. You didn't really see quarterbacks doing the whole like Van Wilder thing a couple of years ago where the most of those guys would move on and graduate when their eligibility was up. And that's like, I think that now it feels like if they can't apply something consistently, they probably need to evaluate the rules and figure out some sort of hard and fast.
Right. And
the, red line.
The age based is and Adam, you mentioned this while we were before we came back on. It's like, yeah, Nate Oates wouldn't mind the age based part because it would cut down on some of the European players that are coming in and entering college, you know, at 21, 22 years old. The 5 years would start either when a player graduates high school or turns 19, so they wouldn't be able to play beyond 24 years of age. That one, I wonder about that. It said there are some exceptions for military duty, religious missions, maternity leave, those type. That would be the only exceptions, really, to the 5 for 5.
Yeah, no, I honestly, I'm not going to lie to you guys. I've not thought about eligibility in that sense before, like, until I saw it today. I think it's going to be so weird because inevitably just the ripple effect of all this stuff, you never know where it's going to go. But with the way that things are trending right now, I think you need something swift and sweeping. And to me, this is, I don't know how swift you can make it happen, but it's sweeping. And that's,
well, if the administrators of the members of the NCAA agree, it can be pretty swift.
Okay. Well, then there you go. And I don't think there's not a single cure-all for everything that is going on in the world of college sports right now. But I think that would certainly be, you know, a step forward and you'd hope a step in the right direction. I'd be curious to see just what the new – see how many people try to circumvent that. You know what I mean? Just with
it's going to be challenged, I would say, immediately. Mm-hmm. As soon, if this passes, and I think it probably will – it will be challenged very, very quickly.
Do you feel like there should be an age limit in college athletics?
I don't know about age limit. I mean, I think there are going to be some exceptions. Yeah. There could be some exceptions. You have some stories, and it's not frequent, but of players who either aren't ready for college or because of one reason or another might not even start their college education until they're 20 or so. I mean,
yeah, I'm less intrigued by the age thing and more like if they can get a handle on eligibility and make it less of a question mark, feels like that would be a step in the right direction from where they are right now. And I mean, I don't know, just it, but it feels like that's something. And
at least you'd know when the end of a player's eligibility is. I mean, now you have no idea where they're going to be or how much it's going to cost you, but at least you'd have an idea, okay, we know how long we have with it, or anyone would have with this player.
Yeah, it feels like it would be a step in the right direction. I mean, because right now there is that mystery. I mean, Chris Murray qualifies for an extra year, right? Mm-hmm. And there's sort of like, you know, there I'm sure there are players who got denied, you know, wondering, you know, what was
right.
what was special about his case or Trinidad's case. And in some cases, it's like, well, you filed in the sympathetic state, right? Or you filed in the right court or something like that. And I'm sure the NCAA would appreciate a system that doesn't seem to vary based on what mm-hmm. what county
no, you started,
you're in or what state
here,
you're in.
Here's when you started. That's when you're going to finish. So that would be that. So that's interesting. But that sort of that can lead us into what is going on right now, and that's the basketball transfer portal, which I heard earlier today there are about 3,000 players that are in it as of this afternoon. I don't know that all those were scholarship players. But,
think about it, though. I mean, if you played well last year and you have eligibility remaining,
why not?
You go into the portal, and if you didn't play well or you didn't play, what are you going to stay and play another year for the coach that mm-hmm. didn't play you this past year? Like, I mean, so it would make sense that almost everyone would go into the trade.
We were saying with Jason a while ago, the players that aren't in the portal right now are negotiating.
Yeah.
The portal
to see
makes
whether or not they stay or go in the portal.
The portal makes sense for players who played a lot, and the portal makes sense for players who didn't play at all, and that encompasses
everybody. That's right.
It's a big Venn diagram of college basketball players, and so it would make sense that almost all of them are in the transfer portal now. And so, now the question becomes, I mean, that's what makes a retention like Kevin Overton so huge, mm-hmm. right? Is that you don't have to worry about seemingly. I know you've had situations where
you've got 13 days,
you retained a guy,
that's
and
right.
you know, third, yeah, maybe don't spike the football quite yet, but like you know, seemingly you've been able to hold on to a guy mm-hmm. that. You can pencil in for he's not a lottery ticket. He's not a project that needs to take huge steps between now and the start of next year. Feels like that's a guy you can in ink you can write down.
I can write him down. 30 plus minutes. He's going to get me 15 plus points a game. He's going to play solid defense. He's going to be a team leader. I mean that's he checks all those boxes. That's something that you want to invest in.
Yeah, that seniority and the familiarity, I think, is going to be I will be following that theme throughout the next 13 days of just, like, who is Auburn adding and how much of it is mm-hmm. guys who have proven that they can play at this level. Because that's just, I think, something they need sorely. And to get Kevin Overton back is a ginormous step in the right direction for that.
Well, and how many, I mean, genuinely, like, how many teams in the SEC are returning someone with those bona fides? Like a guard who did that for them last year. I mean, I feel like it's probably a fairly – I mean, I'm sure there's probably somebody, but it's pretty sure. I mean, Aiden Holloway had a pretty good season. I guess he could come back. But, like, for the most part, like, it's to be able to have and Overton might not be the only one back in the fold. I mean, there's questions about what's Sebastian going to do? What's
Elijah going to do?
What's Elijah Freeman going to do? Like, if Auburn can get a couple of those, and I think those two guys mm-hmm. more or less fit the description, too, of you can feel pretty good about giving them starter-caliber minutes next year without needing – I mean, Sebastian played 28, 30 minutes a game this past year.
No, he didn't.
But what did he average?
Probably 20.
On the season?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought it was closer to.
If it was 28, I
thought it was a little bit. I
he
thought it was,
averaged 27.4.
Okay. Wow, so 27 okay. and a half minutes per game this year. So I mean, I would say that a freshman who just averaged 27 and a half minutes a game for you can probably be slotted into a larger role than that mm-hmm. next year. Mm-hmm. So yeah, Freeman and Sebastian feel like huge. And then there's Tahad.
Right. Yeah. Right. The ultimate domino. You know, that's just it'd be huge, but you just. I mean, what, we're one day in and his name's not in the portal that we know of. So we'll see where that one goes, because that's just I don't even know that I've thought enough on it, right, to think about how significant that could be, because I was really impressed with him down the stretch.
It was much more the point guard.
For all of the times that the shot maybe wasn't falling, which it didn't feel like you saw as much of that down the stretch, it was still like I went back and looked, and it was I think he had 17 games with either multiple blocks or steals, you know, and just as many like five assist games, and he just looked like so much more of a playmaker beyond scoring. He's always mm-hmm. been that when it comes to like creating his own offense, but it was just everything else looked so much better. And to think about what they could unlock with him, to think about what they could bring in with him, like that's dynamic changing to me. But no, him, Sway, Freeman, those are really big pieces if you can keep them.
Williams, Adams, Overton, and Freeman did not miss a game this year. Those are three guys. I mean, and Todd, you had four guys who played 38 games this year. If Robin Jovich missed the St. John's game after Michigan, he was the third game in Vegas. He played the other 37 this year. But no, I mean it's and so yeah. Usually when you have, I mean, the thought that you could bring back two or three or four guys who played 38 games for you at 27 minutes a game or more.
If you could have, you know, if you could feel like you have three starters and you're just adding a couple of other guys to start and then filling out the roster, I think you'd be in great shape heading into next year.
Sway played more minutes than Freeman this year, which would be a bit of a surprise. Mm-hmm. I think some folks would doubt. He was a fourth on the because of the NIT. Sway ended up jumping Murph and became he finished fourth on the team in minutes this season.
Yeah, so this weekend's going to be really interesting. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're going to see who comes in to visit, and I would also think that these guys we're talking about, if they're not in the portal by we're getting toward the end of the weekend, then that's news.
Yeah,
because I don't think they want to wait, you know, too late to get in the portal while other teams are, you know, just spending money.
Right. That's like you said. I mean, for the guys who aren't in the portal right now, they're negotiating or renegotiating. And if you can get a week in, and you might still be negotiating, but that's a lot better place to be than just having them hit the portal first couple days.
And I guess there's a benefit to not going into the portal and sitting and waiting and seeing. But I would think that if you're not sure about, you know, I would think that going into the portal would be the proactive move if you're considering making the move. Maybe you're negotiating.
Going into the portal feels like you're probably not coming back.
Right.
I mean, because, you know, you always hear that, well, they can still come back. But once they get into the portal, it's less likely that they're going to return.
The longer a player isn't in the portal, the longer a player waits, the better you can feel about that player returning to their current school.
Yes, I would think your chances, that's why I was saying, your chances should be going up every minute that they're not in the portal. Although, as I was on with the Sandersons this morning, and one of them was Wimper Barry, said, "Look, everybody's in the portal. They're all in the portal right now because all of their agents are hearing and talking to people. So whether they're in the portal or not, they know where they stand.
When the portal's a phone call away or a button away, like then you pretty much are in the portal, even if you're not actively hearing offers from,
but it's better for the your current team for you not to be in the portal.
And the news of Jovich deciding to go test the waters. You know, we were talking about it with Jason, and you know, I would think that a player like Jovich, you know, he needs to if the rumors are true about the asking price. Mm-hmm. It's like you would need to be willing to commit to him as a starter and a huge piece of the lineup next year. And maybe somebody will. I can understand why Auburn was reluctant to make those kind of promises.
Yeah, like I did a rundown of like, okay, who are the most valuable guys that Auburn could keep from this roster, and really just kind of did a top five. But Jovich was fifth on my list because it's just there's a lot of upside there. You know, I'm really curious to see what he develops into at his best at this level. I don't think you see a lot of forwards who deliver that sort of, you know, performance and that style of play, but there's still a long way to go, you know, and with that much development, yeah, if those rumors are true, if it was that sort of asking price, then that's just, you know, go out and find somebody else at your right number, and maybe Phillip can go out there and find the money he's looking for, you know. But it wasn't, you know, the sky is not falling, I think, over that one, as much as he was, I think, a very fun player when he was on and a bit of a fan favorite too.
What's your assessment of how the NIT, like just the decision to play in the NIT and the fact that they ended up playing the way they did and winning the thing, like how that could potentially carry over into next year?
Yeah, I mean, you managed to pick all of the meat off the bone that was this season in a way that I don't think many coaches in that circumstance, many programs in that circumstance get, you know, of being able to, you know, I think really with Murph's opt out, you know, the way that you had to play so many younger guys, like, I thought the best way it got summed up throughout the whole run was it's like everybody is getting something out of this, like whether or not you know you're bound for the portal, if you're contemplating it, like, you know, you're getting to put, you know, plenty of minutes on film, and at the same time, you know, like you get that momentum of success for the sake of the portal right now, and hopefully that can take you somewhere, whether it was with a Kevin Overton, maybe it is with a Tahad Pettiford or whoever, but ultimately, like, I think one of the biggest things, if not the biggest, was the fact that Steven managed to corral that team to a point where, like, they very well could have quit on him much sooner. If anything, it kind of looked like they quit on him much sooner, but they managed to pull it together and do what they did to win out. And, you know, that to me, I don't know that it's the easiest thing to put into words, but the fact that that team did not quit on him down the stretch of it all, like, I think that was really, really significant.
I think one thing that was interesting, again, back to, and I know who said this one, Wimp Sanderson said this morning, he felt the person that got the most out of this was Stephen Pearl.
Yeah.
He felt that his coaching, his just being able to coach in this situation and then go up to Indianapolis and be in an atmosphere like that and coach, just that is going to help him so much more. He thinks it was just invaluable that yeah, for a lot of coaches, that wouldn't have been the case. But for a first-year coach to be able to do this and have his team respond like that says an awful lot, and thinks that's going to help him tremendously.
Especially with the way the championship game went. Because, you know, I mean, it's like they were up.
Man, when you lose control like that and you're down, it's really, really tough to come back and players were even talking about it afterwards, flashbacks.
Yeah.
You know, Sway talking about flashback to Georgia and, you know, to bad memories. And
yeah.
when you start thinking about that while you're playing, that doesn't usually translate into wins.
Right. It's the proof of concept that you got from all of this, and especially considering that you had so many of those collapses that you just let unravel. The fact that might have been their biggest collapse of the year in terms of, you know, just blowing a lead. But the fact that you, I think it was like once Tulsa took the lead, you kind of saw it settle back down and it was like, okay, they're trading punches now. And it was like, that was not the team we saw heading into the start of SEC play by any means. It's not the team we saw down the stretch either. And so, you know, I think Wimp, that's a really good point that I think he's right. You know, I don't know that anybody benefited from it more than Steven, you know, just to have that proof of concept laid out. You can recruit to that. You know, I don't know that that's going to win everybody over, but, you know, that's probably going to win more people over than not doing it and not having that experience.
It still feels like continuity on the roster, though, is just a must have for Steven. Right. And the fact that he gets Kevin Overton, like that's a big piece that looks like it's coming back for next year, but you would hope that Kevin Overton's not in the Tahad situation where he's playing with 10 new players, right? Like, and it's he's the only part of the roster that stayed and carried over from the NIT, and that's where the announcements of Tahad and Elijah Freeman and Sebastian over the next couple of days, I think could be really important. And you're probably not keeping all three of them.
I'd
say it's the best case scenario for Stephen Pearl as far as having all four of those underclassmen that were huge parts of your team this year, all four of them coming back. But I think you'd like to come away with more than just Kevin Overton, right? Like you'd hopefully be able to keep more than one of those.
I'm sure Kevin's hoping so too. I mean, he's looking at coming back to the same school for the second year, and he'd probably like to have some players he played with last year. All right, let's get to our bottom of the hour break. Love for you to join in, 334-321-1390, as we continue with the Wednesday Drive.
Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive. Bill, Dan, Adam Cole from the Montgomery Advertiser here in the studio. We had Jason Caldwell with us in the first hour, Adam, and he said, tomorrow's going to be pretty busy. There's an awful lot going on. We've got I'd almost forgotten about the football viewing window when I got yep. when I got the email about the major announcement that's going to be with Global Impact coming up.
The major summer event that will be announced tomorrow morning for Jordan-Hare Stadium. Do we have any more specifics than that?
No. I mean, well, okay. Auburn Athletics tweeting out that it's Jordan-Hare Stadium's about to take the global stage, okay. And check back to see what the world's talking about.
So. There's a press conference at 10 a.m. The tweet says 9 a.m.
It's going to be announced or something at 9, and then there'll be a press conference at 10.
Okay.
I hadn't thought of it. It's going to be tough to make the football viewing window and the press conference after I'd already RSVP'd and said, yeah, sure, I'll be there.
Yeah.
So I'm not so sure about that.
No, because it's the football starts at 9:15 technically, but the way it's probably going to start. At 9:45.
If we leave football at 45 after, we're
things start at 9:15 and we get a half an hour.
Okay.
So I mean, I don't know. I don't know.
I want to see.
I don't know if Alex is going to accommodate.
Taylor Bryan will get it done.
Yeah,
Taylor
I want to see what the global announcement is. So.
Yeah. Well, we may know about it before we even get into season.
We probably will.
Yeah.
Actually, follow Twitter.
And I was going to say
probably Butch tomorrow too. Don't you think?
Yeah. Surely. Like, because you're not.
It's usually day before conference series.
You're not doing that. You're not doing that Friday morning.
Oh no. You know? No. So I mean, it's going to be a busy day tomorrow.
And I will say, Texas A&M announced earlier today that they are holding a press conference tomorrow for a. International soccer matchup. So if we want,
interesting.
They announced it straight up.
Interesting. Okay.
Tomorrow may be the day that they are announcing other.
Yeah.
With some of the host sites, Atlanta is going to host. I believe one of the two semifinals is going to be in Atlanta in the World Cup this year.
Yeah.
I know Dallas has. I believe Kansas City.
Yeah, Kansas City.
There are some big football stadiums within big NFL stadiums that are going to host this within. Reasonable distance of some pretty big college stadiums.
Right.
So if they wanted to move the show down the road a little bit for the friendlies or for practices and stuff, I could see a lot of stadia around the country being utilized. It sounds like maybe the SEC will have a couple of those.
Something big coming to Jordan-Hare in June. That's all we know for sure right now.
Could be Dave Matthews. Could be you two.
You looked and saw Morgan Wallen headed.
You know, that actually was my guess if it was going to be a music related thing. Is that Morgan Wallen, who is playing, he's playing Alabama next weekend. He's playing Tuscaloosa.
8-8 weekend.
Playing Tuscaloosa next weekend, and he's playing Gainesville. He's playing the Swamp sometime. In May, and has an open June weekend this summer. But I don't think that's what's being announced. Tomorrow.
No, I don't think so. With the way the wording of
you do
of the,
you do have Zach tweets. Was Zach Bryan in October? I think September or October is
at
coming.
At some
to,
point,
I think
it's
coming to Jordan-Hare.
I'm gonna hear the opening stanza of Revival in stadium ads for the next 5 months.
That's right.
Right.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So. Yep. So. So we'll find that out. But tomorrow, we get
something in the orange and blue.
Yeah.
That was pretty good.
We'll get a chance to see a little more of Auburn football practice tomorrow. We had an opportunity on Tuesday after their scrimmage last week. Anything catch your eye, Adam, that looked a little different than what we'd seen before?
Not particularly. I think what the biggest news of the day was Stanton Rimmel was back out there. Mm-hmm. He wasn't full go, but he did a little bit of indie period, and he was great interview. Stanton Rimmel, a phenomenal interview, I would say. The one thing that's like...
One guy I didn't get a chance to hear, so...
It's you know, it's funny because it's like, okay, great interview, words, what did he say? And, you know, very thoughtful responses, but always just a little silver lining thing I look out for. Eye contact. Made eye contact with everybody, like more than I see most college athletes do.
I think the offensive linemen, you know, a lot of the times are about as good as you're going to get with those types. I mean, thoughtful answers and, you know, not just giving you cliches.
Yeah. No, that's in my experience. They're either that or the total inverse. There were a couple I covered at Mizzou that were just you got them in front of a microphone and the answer was always it's football. And it's like, OK, thanks for not explaining that. But Stanton Rimmel on the other side of that spectrum. So no,
I just hope he's healthy enough to be able to go.
That's the biggest thing. He said that he's eyeing kind of a, I think he said by the time they get into to fall camp, that's the goal is to be 100%. So, no, he was out and moving, and it looked pretty good, all things considered. But, yeah, we're kind of in the dog days of spring football, I guess, if you will. It's a lot more the same. So,
let's get to the drive hotline, 334-321-1390.
Mitch is hanging on. What's up, Mitch?
Hey, guys. Few things. What'd you guys think of the four bald guys and Bruce for the final four?
Yeah, you know, I've seen some pretty negative takedowns of the final four coverage this year. I do think that they probably leaned into like bits and silly stuff a little more. But I get that, like, you're not, you know, the guy who cares about the random mid-major game in January isn't the target audience of the TBS Final Four presentation. They probably could streamline it a little bit. I saw a lot of negative reviews of the Chainsmokers performance. I saw a lot of negative reviews of my man Will Forte dressed as Dr. James.
Oh my goodness, that was
that
not
was
good.
that was like watching teeth. That was like pulling
please,
teeth.
Please, Doc, enough.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Did he show up live?
So yes. At the Final Four before the first game.
Yes.
At the panel, they had seven people.
Did he do Naismith or No Smith?
And they had seven people, and they did a game where Will Forte would present quotes from James Naismith, and they had to guess if they were real quotes or fake quotes. Is it a Naismith or a No Smith? And it was
disastrous.
It was disastrous. I'm a big Will Forte.
No,
fan.
I love Will Forte.
He's great on SNL. Last Man on Earth. It wasn't good at all. But you know what? I thought Bruce handled himself very well and clearly follows more college basketball than a lot of the other guys on that panel.
Right. Well, and speaking of that, why was the Final Four not on CBS this year? You would think there'd be more eyes if it was on CBS because not everybody, you know, has cable or satellite or.
That is because Warner Brothers Discovery paid a lot of money to air NCAA tournament games, and they want you to subscribe to cable so that you can watch networks like TBS and True TV and TNT, and they want to get their money's worth, and so they put the Final Four games and the championship behind the now you can watch it on HBO Max also which is also owned by Warner Brothers Discovery, but they put it behind the paywall of basic cable so that to incentivize you to subscribe to cable and subscribe to a package that includes the Warner Brothers Discovery family of channels.
Okay, it's all about the dollar sign. Yep, all right, moving on. You guys were speaking about the five to play five, and there's some exceptions in there. And I got to thinking, it's like, you know, say I'm a pretty decent football player, basketball player, baseball player, whatever, but family's not doing too well. And when I graduate from high school, I join the military and do 6 years to help the family or whatever. And when I get out at 24, you know, I want to go to college because I got the GI Bill and I want to play a sport. You know, would that be like an exception or a waiver?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. So the exceptions that folks are citing, the most common exceptions that you would need to make in this situation are folks who pause their college athletics career for religious reasons, LDS missions. You know, you have all those, you know, frequently you have like guys on BYU that are 27 and married
and have kids.
So I think that the most notable exceptions they would need to make are those and anyone who served in the military and then wanted to go to college athletics.
Just going
to
say
later on.
I think the three that were reported were, you know, religious reasons, mission trips, military service, and
military,
maternity leave.
Maternity and religious.
And I would guess you could also get like the Chris Winkie sort of deal, right? Where it's like if you played professional baseball out of high school and then wanted to leave professional baseball, you could play a different sport at the college level later in life.
Okay. Well, I saw I guess it was only about four pictures of what the north end zone might look like. It looks incredible.
It really does. I mean, it doesn't look anything like it does or has for years.
Right, right. And then this world-changing thing that's going to happen tomorrow. if it is possibly a World Cup game, I believe when Atlanta hosted the Olympics back, what was that, 96 maybe?
Mm-hmm.
I think Sanford Stadium in Athens actually had soccer there. So they were able to fit the, as Jason was saying in the first hour, how much bigger a soccer field is than a football field. I don't know, maybe, you know, if they have to, they could maybe take out like the first 10 rows at Jordan-Hare and kind of build it up. So, you know, kind of like in an NFL stadium where, you know, the first row in the stadium is actually above, you know, where the players are.
So yeah, I don't think they'd have to take out any of the seats in there. It's just, you know, maybe removing the hedges, you know, taking the hedges out. Because I think there's enough room in the bowl. You just wouldn't be able to have the hedges down there.
Right. Well, yeah. Well, I mean, I know they had to do that at Sanford Stadium. They had to take the hedges out for the soccer. So I just didn't know if, you know.
I think there's enough room.
I got guys. War Eagle.
Cool, Mitch. Great stuff. All right, let's get to our final break of the show. Stick with us as we wind things down here on the Wednesday Drive.
Looking for a home service company you can truly.
Email the drive at espnau.com.
Final few minutes of the Wednesday Drive. Bill, Dan, Adam Cole from the Montgomery Advertiser. Adam, let everybody know before we run out of time. I mean, you know, how they can follow everything you're doing. And I mean, because you pretty much, you cover everything you can. I know that.
Yeah, darn sure trying to. No. If you're looking to go straight to the source, just head to MontgomeryAdvertiser.com and click sports at the top and you'll get a little drop down, and if you click on Auburn, you'll have everything you need. And if you're looking for me on social media, whether that's Twitter, TikTok, just search at Cole Reporter. That's my last name, C-O-L-E, and the word reporter, and you can find me wherever you're looking for me.
All right. Adam does a great job. I mean, he's at every event that he can be, it sure seems like. And yeah, like we said, we've got we're closing in into the second half of spring football. We're about to reach the halfway point here in baseball. And this is, we talked about it early on, but this is a very important series for Auburn this weekend.
Yeah, no, it does not get any bigger. And it, you know, it felt that way going into Arkansas. And it's, mm-hmm. you know, it's, I mean, if you took care of Jacksonville State, you'd still be saying this is an important one, but it would not be so significant. So Auburn's got to find some bats in a hurry.
Yeah, they do. I mean, I would expect, and we'll find out, I guess, tomorrow from Butch what the plan is as far as the rotation. I mean, we had some speculation about, do you keep, now that you're going Friday, Saturday, Sunday, do you keep Jake on Friday and adjust from there, or do you go with Andres, and push everybody back a day?
I would keep Jake where he's at. I would, because let's say you keep him there and you take the rest of what you had last weekend and push it back a day respectively, then like you've got Dre on extra rest, you've got Petro on extra rest, and you've got Sanders on extra rest. And like, I like my odds with that.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. It's going to be interesting.
All right, Adam, really appreciate it. It's always great to have you in. We are out of time here on the Wednesday Drive. What's the, situation is with Ferg tomorrow?
I think Justin Ferguson should be in the house tomorrow.
That's good. We'll get his thoughts. Breaking down some basketball, there's nobody better. We'll have Justin Ferguson in with us tomorrow on the show. Looking forward to that. We're out of time here on the Wednesday Drive. Our thanks to Jason Caldwell joining us in hour number one, Adam Cole here in hour number two, and you for being with us out there in the listening audience, if you will. That's going to do it for the Wednesday Drive. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.